Today on The Wedding Wombat, we're having a deeper look into some of the wedding traditions to see if they are outdated. You might remember that we recently talked all about whether you should change your name or not, and I thought we'd have a little bit more of an explore of some of the wedding traditions that are out there and just see if they're useful to us or not, because a lot of wedding traditions are actually patriarchal. And you might not have considered it. The Wedding Wombat is all about choice. And today we're going to look at some of those traditions and see if they might need to be dropped, changed, or embraced. I'm talking specifically today about heterosexual weddings, as same-sex couples navigate this with more thought due to gender roles and expectations being different. They're forging their own path, but the heterosexual couples are stuck in a groove of tradition. And so we're going to look at that today. So we recently explored those traditions of changing your name. So today we're going to explore a few more. And specifically today we're looking at ones all leading up to your wedding day. That's happening today on The Wedding Wombat. The Wedding Wombat is an Australian-based wedding podcast to give you ideas, things to consider, and interesting perspectives on all things weddings. My name is Margie McCumstie, and as a civil celebrant and MC with Metamorphosis Ceremonies, I love my job and am passionate about celebrating love in meaningful, memorable, and magical ways. I acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Here on The Wedding Wombat, we will sniff out the wedding options, dig out the latest trends, claw at and question traditions to see if they're relevant, and burrow down to discover amazing ideas to help you plan your wedding. It really can be fun, real, and a true celebration of you and the love you share. So welcome to The Wedding Wombat. It's time for us to chat. Today we're exploring the pre-wedding day traditions, and we will explore the wedding day traditions in a future episode. So if you're interested in those, then keep listening. We will cover those another time. Okay, so let's start with asking the father's permission. Is that just a harmless tradition or is it something more? Because asking for the permission to marry a woman, even if just symbolically, from anyone but the woman, is patriarchal. The bride doesn't visit the groom-to-be's mother and ask for permission or his father. And hello, permission? To be of marrying age, you need to be an adult anyway. So why are you asking permission in the first place? Do you ask for permission from your parents to do any other aspect of your life? So if you changed it to asking for the bride's father's blessing, is that really any better? Look, I'm all for love and respecting parents. So if you want to ask, then why not at least have equality and ask for the blessing from both sets of parents? And if that doesn't work for you, then announce your engagement and let them deal with any disappointment about expectations to do with tradition. A woman is not her father's property to gain permission for. I'm going to say it again. A woman is not her father's property to gain permission for. I love a bit of tradition, and regular listeners to the podcast will know that my partner asked my dad before he died for his blessing. He did that, well, we both did that, really. I knew he was going to do it. We did that to honour my dad, even though the meaning behind the tradition didn't sit comfortably with me. It wasn't about me in that situation. It was for my dad. But look, at the end of the day, it's your choice. And often the choice to do it equally is removed by the fact that you want it to be a surprise. And that's, I guess, is the next tradition to look at. And that is for the woman to wait to be proposed to.
It's pretty rare that a woman proposes to a man. Women will mostly wait for the man to do the asking. I even remember being told that the only time a woman could propose was on the extra day on the leap year, and if he said no, he needed to buy her a pair of gloves. Now, I think that tradition's fallen by the wayside, probably because we aren't all flouncing around wearing gloves, but the tradition of waiting for him to get down on one knee with an expensive ring in hand remains. If you're listening to this, you're probably already engaged, but tell me it isn't true for most. If you proposed, if you're a female and you proposed to your man, then tell me all about it. I'd love to hear it, because mostly it's the other way around and the woman's waiting. Now, my situation, you might be like, Margie, you're a hypocrite. You know, I've been with my partner for almost 10 years and I am, I'm hell-bent I'm going to wait and let him propose. But that's a personal choice because he didn't really propose when he was married previously. It was sort of thrust upon him. And I want him to choose. I want him to choose it for himself. So that's a choice I've made. Otherwise, yep, I would have proposed years ago. So, you know, he's a bit of a slow coach. But really, you know, it's not something that you need to wait. You can if you want to, but just have a look at it. Are you, you know, the lonely spinster waiting for the man to decide that you are worthy and to put the ring on your finger? You know, it's patriarchy coming in again. For him to get down on one knee with that ring sparkling in the sunlight. Now, talking about expensive engagement rings, here's another tradition, except this one is a tradition that was made up by a marketing company. So this was for, I think it was called De Beers. I think it was in New York. And they wanted to push diamonds as the gem of choice for engagement rings. They inflated the price by dictating that it needed to be, I think they started out by saying it was a 1 month salary. And then they saw that people started buying those, so they changed it to a 3 month salary. I recently read on one of the, I'm always reading blogs and bridal things, that somebody was saying it should really be 12 month salary. Who says? Well, people who have some money to gain from it say. So now let's look at when people admire your ring, or when we admire a ring. So how often do people say, either, he did well, referring to him either overcoming ineptitude to be able to shop, or that he did what a man is good for, being a financial breadwinning type. Or people say, ooh, you did well, or ooh, you got a good one there. What does that mean? You snagged a man who can keep you financially, or that his worth is based on what ring he could afford? I mean, look, I love it when couples buck the trend and choose a ring or a symbol that means something to them. I know there's couples that are choosing to have matching ring tattoos. You know, they're choosing different gemstones. They're choosing different things, different ways of symbolizing the fact that they're getting engaged. You know, making something meaningful, choosing something that's perfect for them, but not bowing to undue pressure to have the biggest, sparkliest ring as proof. Now, don't get me wrong. I love bling as much as the next gal, but with some of the ethics of the diamond industry being questionable, perhaps we need to explore it further. Okay, so now you are engaged. Who pays for the wedding? More and more couples are looking after the wedding costs themselves, and parents on both sides chip in as they feel they're able to. So I guess, thankfully, that tradition is changing. However, some weddings, it's still expected that the bride's family will be paying for the wedding. Now, I think it's important for us to look at where this tradition started. Now, this tradition comes from cultures where the woman's family would be expected to pay a dowry in order for the husband's family to accept her and take her off her family's hands. Women were considered a burden to care for, and a woman's family would work hard to see her married off. Look, just read some Jane Austen or watch Pride and Prejudice, and you'll see this fully at play. Now, look, I'll always swoon over Mr. Darcy, but those days are surely over. So the big day's coming up. and a bridal shower or kitchen tea is organised. Now, my question is, what equivalent is there for men? Can men attend? Now, the answer to both those questions is commonly no. There is no equivalent for men, and men don't attend bridal showers or kitchen teas. Now, what does this say? That the bride needs to receive gifts and get prepared for marriage, but the groom doesn't? So let's look at some of the presents that you typically receive at a kitchen tea or a bridal shower. And, you know, really, if you look at it, they're often patriarchal in nature too. So bridal showers, you'll often find that you'll receive sexy negligees or lingerie. And if it's a kitchen tea, perhaps it was traditionally kitchen items to help the bride set up her kitchen. Hello, are we in the 1950s? Is a woman only useful in the kitchen or the bedroom? If there's any potential grooms listening to this podcast and, you know, nudging their bride-to-be, just check yourself, because, you know, really, like, women are not just a plaything in the bedroom or you know, there to cook the man his meals. So, you know, what do these parties say, the bridal showers and the kitchen teas? Look, by all means, have a party, but be real about what it's for. Look, maybe a joint party with the guys there and date night suggestions or gifts. Maybe separate parties where he gets sexy lingerie too. I am not suggesting that while she's oohing and aahing over a colander or a teapot, that he is excitedly opening a hammer or a drill. I'm not trying to perpetuate stereotypes. Besides, I'm quite handy with a drill and hate cooking. So the wedding date's drawing near, and it is time for bachelor and bachelorette or hens parties. I've got no problem with celebrating with your friends, but the whole last night of freedom, or men wearing a plastic ball and chains to symbolise going into a life of slavery, all those sorts of metaphors are just kind of gross to me. You are getting married because you love each other and want to share a future. You might say, oh, come on, Margie, it's just a bit of fun. And I'm not trying to be a party pooper, but geez, come on. Your freedom doesn't change when you get married. Like, unless you're in an open relationship that you're closing upon getting married, how is your freedom changing? You are free but committed. And you're not entering into slavery. So if my partner ever referred to me as the old ball and chain, I'd be out of there. I'm not there to hinder his life or, you know, hold him into a life of slavery or have him feel like he's stuck in something. I want him to choose to be there and want to be there. And look, honestly, you know, all the couples I marry, that is the case. They are choosing to be there. They love each other. But then why do we do this when we, you know, we like when we're going out to do bachelorette parties or hens parties or bucks nights and you know, they're walking around with a plastic ball and chain, or she's got, you know, condoms all stuck to a veil or something. Like, what's that all about? Well, I think we know what it's about, and that is that, you know, this sexy single life is over, and, you know, that like they're off, you know, having sex promiscuously with whoever they want to, whenever they want to, and that life changes as of tomorrow because you're getting married. Like, I'm sorry, but most relationships are not like that. And, you know, if they've been like that right up until the wedding day, it's probably not going to change. So look, kick your heels up, have some fun, but think about the inherent messages in how you celebrate. In a future episode, we're going to explore some wedding day traditions that deserve a further look. So feel free to share with me your thoughts or tell me how you are bucking traditions to create your day your way. All right, so today I'm going to share with you our top five, this is sort of to sum up, our top five ideas for pre-wedding day patriarchy smashing. So number one is to ask both sets of parents for blessing or don't ask at all. So if you can't have a conversation with both sets of parents to say what you're thinking of doing, ask for their advice and their blessing for your union, then, you know, you don't belong to somebody, you're your own person, you know, just don't do it. Number two is perhaps if you've had to do that, if you've decided you're going to do that, you're going to talk to the parents, then it takes away some of that, like that this person's going to ask this person, the surprise element. So maybe you could both plan a surprise proposal date. Each of you plan one after talking to the parents about your plans. Maybe it'll be in the week after you have that discussion. So it can still be something special, and you each have a turn at getting down on one knee and presenting them with a ring or a watch or, you know, a tattoo voucher or whatever it is that works for you. Number three, talking about rings, is choose engagement rings or a symbol of your engagement for you both that are meaningful and don't necessarily cost a fortune. Spend what you're able, spend what you like, or don't spend anything at all. It needs to be meaningful. It needs to be special to you. At the end of the day, it's not a competition, and you know, people go, oh, show me your ring. They're going to say it's lovely anyway. So you choose what you want. And if people have a problem with the ring you've chosen, then that's their issue. All right, number four is to pay for the wedding yourselves and accept any financial help offered by either side. It is not the bride's family's responsibility unless you are ultra traditional and that's important to them. But even so, you need to look at it and have a think. Okay, hang on. Is this linking back to outdated notions of a dowry? Or is it just, you know, like question it. Do we need to have this? And realistically, these days, most couples are already living together and they've got combined incomes. So, you know, pay for the wedding you can afford. There's a lot of budget weddings, wedding groups in Facebook that are out there that you can join to get ideas and to buy recycled items. So pay for the wedding you can afford. Pay for it yourselves. Have that independence. And by all means, accept any financial help that is, you know, offered by either side within their abilities. And number five, and I really love this idea, have a combined farewell single life party. Not farewell single life as in farewell being able to have random sex with strangers kind of thing, but just a farewell being single party, and have it as a combined one with all the guys and gals there. Just have a bit of a party, let your hair down, have some fun. And so that it's not the guys all going off to watch a stripper or something and, you know, and the girls playing with sex toys or something. It's a combined party just to have some fun. So there you have it. There's my top five. And I hope it's given you some things to think about today.
The Wedding Wombat comes out on the 10th, 20th and 30th of each month. And you're invited to listen in and share it with your friends. Did you know that a group of wombats is called a wisdom? Subscribe to The Wedding Wombat, leave us a review, or contact me directly with your questions or answers to margie@metamorphos.com.au or message me through Facebook on my page, Metamorphos Ceremonies. My contact details are in the show notes.
This episode's Wedding Wombat Wisdom comes from Raina Maria Rilke, who said, "Loving does not at first mean merging, surrendering, and uniting with another person. Once the realization is accepted that even between the closest people, infinite distance exists, a marvelous living side by side can grow up for them if they succeed in loving the expanse between them, which gives them the possibility of seeing each other as a whole before an immense sky." I hope you've had some things to think about today as we smash the patriarchy here on The Wedding Wombat. We'll see you next time for another episode very soon.
Bye for now, friends, and I'll chat to you next time on The Wedding Wombat.